Hello, Suncoast. My name is Ira, and welcome back for another episode of The Ruthless Truth. Today, we have a very special episode on International Migrants Day. And here to kick us off with our regular True Updates is the local organizer, Sarah.
Hi, Ira. It's great to be here today. Let's get started with our True Updates. DeSantis designates the Muslim Brotherhood and CARE, Council on American Islamic Relations, as foreign terrorist organization. We see this as an effort to silence organizations and people who demand accountability from the state for investing on Israel's genocidal regime. CARE has responded with a press brief and a decision to fight back against the allegation and an attempt to silence. Secondly, 22 million people may see their health insurance premiums double as the GOP-led Senate rejected a bill that would have extended tax credits under the Affordable Care Act. President Trump has signed an executive order blocking states from regulating AI. To date, AI has become a leading cause for job insecurity. Free Laquia Cordia, a young Palestinian woman and New Jersey resident who has been confined by ICE since April. So for over 200 days, she has been confined after exercising her First Amendment right to protest peacefully. At a recent press conference held by CARE and Dream Defenders of Tampa Bay, The Ruthless Truth asked attendees a few questions.
What is your name and what brought you out today?
My name is Nadia Askar. We came out here today to protest for Laquia Cordia. She has been detained by ICE since March 13th, not because she committed a crime, but because she spoke out against the genocide in Gaza that has taken the lives of approximately 175 members of her family.
And why do you think the authorities have an interest in keeping Laquia in detention?
At this point, it's not about immigration paperwork. The administration is trying to repress anybody who exposes the truth, which is that we're watching the same state violence here unfold, which is connected to the same state violence overseas.
Thank you so much, Sarah, for doing the True Updates. As of airing, tomorrow will be International Migrants Day. And I kind of want to start this off with getting into the history of International Migrants Day, where it came from, and maybe a little bit about the hypocrisy of it. So, Sarah, could you break down how this day came to be?
Absolutely. So International Migrants Day is a day popularized by the UN General Assembly that commemorates when they adopted the resolution on the International Convention on the Protection of the Rights of All Migrant Workers and the Members of Their Families. That is what the whole resolution is called. A UN multilateral treaty that claims to govern the protection of migrant workers and families. And it was signed on December 18th of 1990, but not fully ratified until 2003. On the UN website, it says, quote, International Migrants Day gives us a special opportunity to shine a spotlight on the invaluable contributions of millions of migrants around the world. It's also a day for us to highlight the increasingly complex environment in which migration occurs. Conflicts, climate-related disasters, and economic pressures continue to drive millions of people from their homes in search of safety or simply opportunity, end quote. So, let's not beat around the bush with this statement. The increasingly complex environment in which migration occurs, it sounds like such a sterile and just dissociated way to describe the current climate that we're in right now.
Yeah, absolutely. Talk about not actually identifying the problem. That environment isn't abstract. It's not accidental. The U.S. immigration system is purposefully complex because complexity is a tool of control. The system was corrupt before Trump. This is long reaching. The beloved Obama was referred to as the deporter in chief, as many people forget. And it has always existed and has existed to amplify ruling class control over people, over labor. And now you can very much see this out in the open. It's much more easy to identify with this current administration, but it has been like this for a very long time, especially kicking off since the 70s in American history. This current system restricts access, denies asylum, exploits migrant labor, and shifts blame onto individuals while preserving the illusion of legality and fairness. Sarah, do you know on average how long it takes to immigrate into America? the right way?
I do not.
Between about 17 and 20 years for the average person.
No wonder someone would come without doing the paperwork, because who has time to wait for that?
Literally, we need a new system, a system that prioritizes human need over raw profit. So let's get into it. Let's start with Western intervention. There are very few countries on Earth where America doesn't directly have its hand in controlling those countries. Yes, immigration is a natural thing. Before there were walls and borders, people have migrated up and down the North American continent. The pre-Columbian era had a natural flow of travel and trade, but that is not at all comparable to today's migration, which is generally a forced process for those fleeing the ramifications of U.S. imperialism and corporate greed. Today, migration is often not a choice, despite how it is framed, but it is a necessary act of survival in response to deliberately manufactured conditions. Refugees and migrants are created through capitalism. America and the West has invaded and interfered in the elections of most of the global South. The grips of neocolonialism covers most of the world. And in all these places, neocolonialism extracts the rich and vast resources of the world and funnels them into the West. It turns rainforest, cocoa, and oil into hamburgers, Hershey's chocolate, and Barbie dolls. The countries that we steal from are rich beyond measure. South America is rich. Central America is rich. Africa is rich. All of these countries have the resources that make everything. Look around you. None of these raw materials were sourced from America, were sourced from Western Europe. No, look around you. Look at everything in your house. Look at everything you own. Where was it assembled? Where were the resources mined? Where were the trees cut down? These countries are rich. They have most of the resources that capitalism needs to function. There is no, only the people are poor. There is no reason the people should be poor other than exploitation, other than their resources being ripped from them, stolen from them. You don't go into a poor man's house to rob him. You go into a rich man's house. And that is the number one framing that I believe people really need to take away, is that people who come to America looking for a better life, the reason they have to look for a better life in the first place is because their better life was stolen by capitalism and imperialism.
Absolutely. Yeah. These like multinational corporations just go in and they extract the labor and the resources. Mm-hmm. And it's like, if you look back in history, you can find numerous times that entire economies were just hollowed out and all of the riches brought back to a country in the global north. Most of the time, you're going to find the culprits are the United States, the UK, a couple different countries in Europe.
Now, let's round this back to some other reasons people might flee, and that is natural disasters. Do you think, Sarah, you could go into a little bit about why so many populations are ill-equipped for natural disasters?
Yeah, colonial extraction, whether we're talking about the United Fruit Company, now Chiquita Bananas, funding Colombian paramilitary groups to quote-unquote protect their operations, or at home, if we're talking about meta facilities moving into a rural or low-income neighborhood that is experiencing bad water quality and overall safety concerns, like whether we're talking about another country or at home, this privatization has stripped communities of infrastructure, healthcare, affordable housing, and competent disaster preparedness. A great example of that is when Helene hit Asheville and the surrounding areas. It exposed real gaps in disaster readiness and infrastructure resilience. At Weaverville, North Carolina, there's a quote that says, "The water system, already strained by years of delayed maintenance and underfunding, was catastrophically damaged. The primary pipeline serving about 80% of Asheville customers was washed out, disconnecting major treatment plants and leaving taps dry. Residents went without running water for weeks, relying on tanker trucks and buckets to collect basic water for flushing toilets and drinking, end quote. And we're not even talking about all of the people who straight up lost their homes, and FEMA did little to nothing. And if they did get help from FEMA, it took months and months of paperwork and processes. So yeah, whether we're talking about colonial extraction abroad or at home, it's the same playbook every single time.
Absolutely. Especially, I'm glad you brought up a southern state, because we really do treat the South, the southern United States, the states that have the highest amount of the Black population, like another country. We degrade them and demean them, and we purposefully extract so many resources, so many agricultural resources. You know, it's grown in the southern United States, and that's where and the people there are the most exploited. So I think that is a brilliant parallel to draw, just how these things are. These same systems do affect Americans currently living in America as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And bringing this back to the statement that the UN had on their website about International Migrants Day, there was also a part where we talked about the economic pressures, but there was no mention of like where those economic pressures are coming from.
Yeah, exactly, Sarah. We're not actually getting to the root of the issue here. From neoliberal trade agreements to corporate exploitation, debt imposed by international financial institutions, you know, the World Bank, Bretton Woods institutions, wage suppression, land dispossession, the ruling class keeps us working people in perpetual instability and anxiety.
Absolutely. There was no mention of like where the economic pressures are coming from or pointing any fingers, just that they exist. Superficial statements of goodwill by the UN, they function as political theater when powerful states within the U.S. Within the General Assembly, particularly the United States, the United Kingdom, and Israel, continue to actively harm migrants through violent border regimes, mass detention, deportations, and policies designed to criminalize survival. The Convention on the Protection of the Rights of All Migrant Workers and the Members of Their Families, the resolution, claims to defend migrant dignity, yet without enforcement, it serves as a moral fig leaf, a document crafted to invoke concern when the very governments that are capable of upholding it refuse to ratify, implement, and respect its protection. It's fluff. It's the equivalent of thoughts and prayers. And that's no disrespect to International Migrants Day, but it is just a meaningless symbol.
Yes, excellent point. The whole UN is a sham, I'll go so far to say, when it says that it stands up for working people. Because if it actually cared about migrants, it would spend all of its time screaming and shouting up and down the halls, pointing the blame at capitalism and Western imperialism, the true culprit. So I'm so glad we were able to really capture the hypocrisy of this entire day, really. But I do want to talk about why this reliance on migrant labor, because it's one thing that we cause the surge of immigration into wealthy countries, but also we directly benefit and our economies directly benefit from their instability and lack of safe place to live. The U.S. economy has structured itself to rely on migrant labor, especially on undocumented migrant labor. Your strawberry festival would not exist without undocumented immigrants. Most of the agriculture, especially in Florida, especially around here, I know y'all been down to Plant City, wouldn't exist without migrants. It is a fact. And they would have to, like, without this cheap labor, they would, God forbid, have to pay more wages to people who had a stronger position to fight back and organize for their rights. So America wins on two folds with this. We go in, we loot these countries, we displace them, we get cheap labor from them in their countries. And when they come here because of our displacement, we extract even more cheap labor from them. It never ends. We get every penny we can out of these people. I want to talk about a day that actually highlights immigrants in a very organic way, which is the Day Without Immigrants. Now, this began back in 2006 with a rather large protest that rallied around 2 million people, and recently has come back in 2017 through like the internet and organic organizing.
Yeah, the Day Without a Migrant. So millions of migrant workers gathered for International Workers' Day in 2006. They striked, they walked out, and they boycotted a bunch of US products. There was a bunch of demonstrations all around the country, and it was just a historic day for the working class. The US ruling class and their big businesses pretty much immediately set out to like minimize the scope of what took place on that day. Press reports grossly undercounted how many demonstrations there were, and that still happens to this day. I am constantly shocked by how many of my more left-leaning friends don't know about all of the demonstrations that happen around Tampa Bay. Voices of Florida down in Sarasota, Dream Defenders up in Tampa Bay, the Party for Socialism and Liberation, of which I am a member of. There are constantly working people pushing back. Lastly, Ira, I would love to highlight a quote by Noelle Xavier, the organizing director for the North Atlantic States Regional Council of Carpenters. They said, "While it's important to remind the country of the value migrant workers bring to the communities they toil in, many workers could not afford to take a day off." And that's another thing that I think about when I think about the Day Without Immigrants. They cannot afford to take a day off, but the United States would crumble in a day without immigrants.
Absolutely. And, these sorts of things are only growing in awareness and transparency as ICE really breaks down. I do feel like there is more of a solidarity with immigrants that we might have not have seen in the past. So let's talk about ICE for a second. ICE would not be able to get away with all of their transgressions. I'm sure we don't need to do a recap of this episode. You've seen what's happening around you. You've seen what's happening on the news. Even the mainstream news media will show you a glimpse of the brutality. They would not be able to get away with that if it wasn't for the ruling class and the government that serves them, regularly programming the US population into a lull by exploiting xenophobia, racialized fear, and sensationalist media narratives that scapegoat migrants and coordinate policy choices that channel funding and contracts to detention profiteers.
I know the people who are fully documented, like have their green cards, have their work permits. They're having these court dates be scheduled. They're showing up in cooperation, and then, something mysteriously happens with their case. Something pops up, and then before you know it, you're shoved into the back of a van, and your kids and partner are stuck in the parking lot, and just taking videos and trying to advocate for themselves and tell everyone what happened to them. And we see these videos, and I fear that people are becoming a little desensitized to them because we see them every day. Happening to another person.
I think that's a great point. When the media plays these images and there's no connection to a call to action, it is demoralizing. And that's what it serves to do. That's why they, especially the more liberal, fake, sympathetic media will show so much of this. It is meant in a way to say, this is the reality of things. It is not meant to inspire a fight back. Now, some other narratives that I've seen that I've heard a lot of people actually talk about earlier this year in early 2025 was very racist stereotypes around particular groups of immigrants. This year in 2025, they really kicked it off with hoaxes about Haitians eating cats and causing violence, even though we know immigrants across the board have much, much lower rates of violent crime and nonviolent crime than native citizens.
Yeah, I mean, like when J.D. Vance claimed that the Haitians were eating pets, that was incredibly offensive to literally every person who watched it.
I mean, I wish I had people that, were from, I've talked to people from Springfield, Ohio, who were like, oh yeah, it's totally happening. So like that had some true believers among reactionaries, among the right wing. Of course, it fizzled out with as the news does, and people stop talking about it as they go on to find the new target. There was lots of recent propaganda against Somali immigrants. They're kind of the new target, at least for the people who need a new group of Black people to scapegoat. Trump has been calling them garbage people. Trump has been And he's actually saying that he's planning an ICE operation in Minneapolis because, it has a somewhat significant Somali population, not nearly as high as people think, I will say. The way people talk about it, like, it's like you'd think the entire city of Minneapolis, the whole Twin Cities, would be like Somali immigrants, which, don't get me wrong, that sounds like a party to me, but it's not the reality. They're still very much a minority, and they're already harassing Somali immigrants. Did you know Ilhan Omar's own son was recently targeted by ICE?
I did not.
It's sick. He's a boy, he's a child. So that now that's the one of the new big scapegoat goats of people in the media consciousness. Tell me a little bit more about maybe a different group of people who are receiving a lot of attention, but maybe portrayed in a false light.
When I think of the Somalian people being targeted by Trump, I also think about, because this is International Migrants Day, the Syrian refugees being oppressed in Europe. You know, the sanctions were lifted once the socialist-run government or the Arab Socialist Ba'ath Party was overthrown and reinstated with a more fundamentalist religious leader who's really like willing to kiss the ring. And we've seen this repeatedly. Sanctions on socialist governments like Cuba, Venezuela all serve the same purpose, to attempt to starve a country into submission so we can use them for our the United States business interest and the global North business interests. It's just so depressing, Ira. And when I think about, you know, this International Migrants Day popularized by the UN, you do think of it as just a band-aid over a bullet hole. It's not fixing anything. There are no real resolutions that are, you know, causing real change. And if this resolution has, which I did look into some of the concrete, like material realities that came out of the International Convention on the Protection of the Rights of All Migrant Workers and Members of Their Families, and I could not find a real concrete reality that was changed because of this multilateral treaty.
Yeah, I think it's so wonderful that we highlighted the hypocrisy of the day coming up tomorrow for our listeners, So, but here's the thing. Where is real change going to come from then? Right? It's enough for us to point out the UN as somewhat of a fraud institution, a very simple to do, I think. But where is real change going to come from? I think it's going to come from the people. I think it's going to come from the bottom up, from the working class. It will take me and you, everyone listening, entire mass working class movement is what it's going to take to do two things. Take care of the migrants in our community and in our home, and also to restore the riches that have been stolen from the world and to right the wrong of that injustice. That cannot be done as long as capitalism exists. It cannot be negotiated with. It is an all-encompassing violent force that will kill you to make a penny. And that system must be overthrown. It must be destroyed. And only then can there be peace for not just the global south, not just the migrants that have been forced to come here, for everyone, for all of us. The only way we can truly stand arm in arm with each other as siblings of this world.
I agree. And for the first time in US history, polls show that the majority of people under 30 have a favorable view of socialism over capitalism. And I think this shift reflects growing disillusionment with like just the endless wars, the inequality, the false promise of this American dream. And even the migrants who come here have realized that they are being lied to in some aspects. You know, young people are seeing through the hypocrisy of an empire that preaches democracy and then it's bombing, sanctioning, and just destabilizing everyone else for profit. And particularly Venezuela, which we talked about last week, is not suffering because socialism failed. It's suffering because the US has weaponized starvation. The sanctions have blocked billions of dollars in Venezuelan assets. You know, they cut off access to medicine and sabotage the country's main source of revenue, the oil industry. These policies are deliberately creating shortages so the US can blame the Venezuelan government, destabilize the society, and you know, justify this intervention. All over the world, workers are striking, communities are organizing, and people are starting to realize that the system we live under was not built to serve them. And I would love to see solidarity between Americans, migrants of all kinds, with our this is what International Migrants Day should actually be. Linking hand in hand, learning about the struggles of other cultures and other people in other nations, and do something about it. The Tampa Bay Immigrant Solidarity Network is constantly looking for people to get involved, to look out for our neighbors, to make sure that their children are clothed and fed, to keep an eye out for ICE, and to, you know, be part of those networks that keep people in the loop and keep everyone safe, because we keep us safe. You know, the same government that starves Venezuela is the same government that uses ICE to raid your neighborhood. The same corporations supporting coups abroad are committing wage theft at home and stealing out of your pocket. The same empire that bombs other nations is the one that militarizes our neighborhoods and police forces. I'm thinking about the curfew ordinance being discussed in Palmetto City Council right now. I would really love for someone to lay out a good argument for why that's a good idea, because that is literally our neighborhood being policed more strongly for no reason. No reason.
Actually, let me rant for a second about this new curfew. So, there's a new curfew in Manatee County, restricting access to public spaces for anyone under 16. According to Tampa Bay 10, this new curfew applies Sunday through Thursday starting at 11 p.m. and Fridays and Saturdays 11 a.m. to 6 a.m. Now, Manatee County Sheriff's Office says that first-time violators will get a ride home and repeat offenders will face fines up to $50. This is not a tried-and-true social technique that keeps all young kids out of trouble. It's flawed logic to say that if Palmetto doesn't do this, somehow it will become a hub for kids making trouble late at night. All the curfew is an opportunity for cops to interact with young people of color and have something to accuse them of. These are our kids in our neighborhoods, and I encourage everyone to go to the next Palmetto City Council meeting to give community feedback and push back on this ordinance.
Particularly our kids in our neighborhood. So thank you so much, Sarah, for being on this episode. I believe that is about our time, unfortunately. We're definitely going to have to bring it back on for some more deep dives. And let's end this off with the Next in Neighborhood.
All right, Ruthless Truth listeners, we have a special event happening in Tampa this weekend for our listeners who don't mind the drive. The Party for Socialism and Liberation is putting on a Noche Cubana at Centennial Park in Ybor City at 5:30 p.m. December 20th. If you long for a fun evening of Cuban music, food, and art, please join us. Happening the same day, local community members in Sarasota are inviting you to attend a night of remembrance, a vigil for separated families, and immigration reform on Saturday, December 20th from 6 to 8 p.m. at Five Points Park in downtown Sarasota, organized by the Democratic Women's Club of Sarasota County and El Pueblo Unido, Tampa Bay in coordination with Immigration Justice Coalition of Southwest Florida and the Church of the Trinity MCC. The candle Light Vigil will honor families separated by immigration policies and enforcement. The evening will include storytelling, readings, testimonies, and moments of reflection to acknowledge the impact of detention and deportation on families in the Minnesota region and beyond. All are welcome to attend. Limited candles will be provided, and we recommend using battery-operated candles. Thank you, listeners, for listening to another episode of The Ruthless Truth. I'm handing it back to you, Ira.
Thank you so much. Once again, thanks for coming on, Sarah. And for all of our Suncoast listeners, don't forget to get up, stand up, and don't give up the fight.